Okay, today we discuss a new class of methods. We discuss them today in the following lessons that are usually called data reweighting methods. These methods are very useful because they allow you to enlarge the use of your Monte Carlo data. So let's work in the canonical ensemble and let's assume that we have a Hamiltonian and that the state space is discrete. So for instance, we are dealing with an Eisen system so that we do a sum over the configurations, we don't do an integral. So also the energy takes discrete states. So it does not have a continuous spectrum of values. So we assume that the energy is discrete. So this is the only assumption, but of course this assumption is just for convenience. It will not be relevant for the result that we will present. So we work in the canonical ensemble, we do a simulation at a certain given inverse temperature, beta zero, and we ask two questions. So we have done the simulations at beta zero. Can we obtain results at a different value of the temperature? For instance, at beta one, with beta one different from zero? This is the first question. And second, from the simulations at beta zero, can we obtain, compute free energies? So these are the two questions. And as we shall see, the answer to the first question is positive, but there will be a constraint. It will be positive in the sense that we will, in principle, be able to compute average values at beta one, but from a practical point of view, we will only be able if beta 1 minus beta 0 in absolute value is sufficiently small. And how small this temperature difference should be depends on the number of particles. If you increase the number of particles, the interval in which the calculation is doable shrinks as 1 over square root of n. This is what we will discuss. The second question, we know already that it doesn't have a positive answer because we already said that we cannot compute in Monte Carlo calculations free energies. Free energies or partition function, they are the same and they are related by a logarithm one with the other. So you can never compute partition functions on free energies using Monte Carlo methods. However, if we know the free energy at beta zero and we have been able to compute it by using a different method, which is not the Monte Carlo method, but we have been able to compute the free energy at beta zero, then in this case, we can compute the free energy at a different temperature, at beta one, for instance. So now we will discuss two methods. The first one allows you to compute mean values at beta one, given data at beta zero, and it will allow us to compute the free energy at beta one, provided we already know the free energy at beta zero. So let's see how it works, because the formula is quite simple. So we want to compute the average value at beta one. So we write, this is the formula in the middle of page one. We write it explicitly. So it's the numerator, so the sum over the configurations x of a of x e to minus beta one of h, divided by the partition function, which is the sum over x of the exponential of minus beta 1h. Now the trick consists in adding two terms such that their product is 1. So we add both in the numerator and the denominator e to minus beta 0h times e to plus beta 0h. Since they have opposite sign, they cancel. So nothing changes, but now we can reinterpret the numerator and the denominator, adding in front of the two sums 1 divided by the partition function of beta 0. Of course, we can do that, this is in the second line, because they simply cancel between numerator and denominator, and then we interpret numerator and denominator as average values computed at inverse temperature beta zero. So you see, the average value at beta one is the ratio of two different values computed at beta zero. And of course, the average values of beta zero, we know how to compute them using Monte Carlo methods, using our data we have obtained in our simulation at beta zero. The same trick works for the free energy. So we consider beta 1 times the free energy of beta 1, which is minus the logarithm of the partition function at inverse temperature beta 1. Again, we add and subtract. We add subtract in the exponent, but effectively we introduce two factors whose product is 1, e to minus beta 0 h times e to plus beta 0 h. Their product is 1, so nothing changes. Then we introduce inside the logarithm two factors, z of beta 0 multiplied by 1 over z beta 0, so that the sum can be rewritten as an average value. Then we open up the logarithm, and in this way, you see, we obtain the beta 1, the free energy at beta 1, is beta 0, the free energy at beta 0, minus the logarithm of an average value of beta 0. So if f beta 0 is known, this formula allows you to compute f of beta 1. Note an important point in this result, that in both equations, there is a term e to minus d delta beta h. So we are computing averages in which we have a factor e to minus delta beta h. This formula in principle solves the problem for any beta 1. So you choose beta 1 and you compute the average values, and this provides you the result. However, the method only works if the error on our average values is sufficiently small. And unfortunately, this is not the case if delta beta is large. So let's try to understand why this happens. So let's consider the Hamiltonian. As we already discussed in the last lesson, the average value of h is an extensive quantity, so it scales like n. But what really matters here is that the fluctuations vary in an interval of width square root of n. So effectively, h fluctuates between e0, which is the mean value, plus a square root of n, and e0 minus a square root of n. Which means that this factor, e to minus delta beta h, varies between m, which is some kind of average value, times e to minus delta beta a square root of n, and m a delta beta a square root of n. And as you can see, these two numbers, the upper limit and the lower limit, are very different in size because they are an exponential, they are obtained as an exponential, in which there is a square root of n inside the exponential. So for a typical system, n may be of order 100, 1000, so square root of n is a quite big number, from 10 to 30. So this exponential varies significantly on one side and on the other side. So there will be lots of fluctuations, and when you take the sample mean will be dominated by the very few terms in which the exponential is the maximum. So it means that the results depend on limited number of data, and you can easily imagine that this means that the error is large. Of course, if you want to have small error, you need to have delta beta so small that square root delta beta is of order 1. This implies that the method works only in a tiny interval, not really tiny, but in an interval which shrinks as n increases. So we can want to make this qualitative argument a little bit more physical. So let's look at the picture. In the picture, I plotted the distribution of the energy for two different values, beta 0 and beta 1. Roughly speaking, they will be Gaussian, centered roughly around the mean value of the Hamiltonian, with a width will be of the order of the standard deviation. And we have discussed that the standard deviation of this distribution scales like the square root of the specific heat, and so it scales like the square root of n. So we have these two distributions. So when do we expect to have good results at beta 1 from simulations at beta 0? Well, it's quite easy to understand. When we do the simulation, we do important sampling. So we know that there is a small class of configurations that essentially determine the behavior at beta 0, and there is a small class of configurations that determine the behavior at beta 1. These are the so-called typical configurations. So in a simulation at temperature beta 0, we are able to compute average values at beta 1 only if we also sample at the same time most of the configurations that are typical at beta 1. So the condition for the method to work is that in the simulations at beta 0, we explore also the system, the typical configurations of the system at inverse temperature beta 1, which in practice means that the two distributions, the distributions at beta 0 and the distributions at beta 1, the energy distribution, should overlap. Because the typical configurations are, of course, the configurations that belong to the bulk of the distribution, so to the configuration whose energy is such that H of E is not negligible. And so we want that the two distributions essentially overlap. The region in which H, the energy histogram, is non-small, is reasonably large for beta 1, should be also a region in which H, computed for the model at beta 0, is also reasonably large. So the condition is the following. So we want that the center, the average value at beta 1 is essentially included in the relevant part of the distribution of the configurations of the energy computed at beta 0. So this means, and this is the equation which are written below for the specific example, that the average value of beta 0 times the width of the distribution, which is the standard deviation, should be of the order, or larger, than the mean value computed at E1. Computed at beta 1, so E1. So this is the condition, which tells you that the difference between E1, the average value of beta 1, and the average value of beta 0 should be less than the standard deviation. So here, the constraint is that the distribution computed at beta 0 should have a significant overlap with the distribution at beta 1, which we translate in formula saying that we want that the average value computed at beta 1 falls inside the region, the typical region, which is the typical region for the energy at beta 0. So is included in the range which spans from the mean value at beta 0, E0, plus and minus one standard deviation. Of course, this is just a qualitative argument, so we say plus or minus one standard deviation, you could say two standard deviations, it doesn't change much. This is just qualitative. Constants are not very relevant here. So the condition at the end that we obtain is that the difference between E1 and E0, the average values in absolute value, should be less than the standard deviation of the distribution at beta 0. And now we see what this implies. E1 minus E0, if beta 1 is close to beta 0, we can easily compute by doing a Taylor expansion. We remember that the derivative of the energy with respect to beta is minus C hat, remember the minus C hat, so that we can expand. And so we see that E1 minus E0 is minus delta beta C hat. While for the fluctuations, we know that that is equal to the square root of C hat. So we plug everything inside And we see that delta beta in absolute value should be less than the square root of the specific heat, rather of C hat, which differs by a factor kT square from the specific heat. And again, we recover the same condition as before. Since C hat is extensive, we see that the method works only if the square root, or only if the interval shrinks with 1 over square root of n.